Regular listeners to the Travel Show will recall that a couple of weeks ago, Ed Hill and I reported the findings of the Aviation Accessibility Task and Finish Group, chaired by Baroness Tanny Gray Thompson. Ed is with me again, and we are thrilled, is the only word for it, to be joined now by Baroness Gray Thompson. We're going to talk about the conclusions reached by her group and what needs to happen now for passengers with reduced mobility or otherwise requiring assistance in and around the airport. So welcome to the Travel Show.
Thank you.
Now, you are, without a shadow of doubt, our greatest ever Paralympian athlete, winning 16 medals, 11 of which are gold, and you competed in not one, not two, but five Olympic Games. Most recently, of course, at the Centenary Games in Athens in 2004, which isn't so very far away, and many of us have visited it. But your first Games were in 1988 in Seoul. And I can confirm from personal experience, it's a long old haul to South Korea. So you have flown a great deal, not just on the athletics track, but by plane. So before we turn to your report, can you tell us a little bit about your own experiences and challenges of flying?
Yeah, real mixed bag. Plenty of flights that I got there, okay, my luggage arrived and my racing chair arrived in one piece, but also ones where it didn't happen like that. And I think that the one that was probably one of the worst was I was flying back from Switzerland and I've been on the plane a little while, so my chair wasn't there. So you start to think something's wrong. I decide to use one of the airport chairs just because I thought, oh, it might be quicker. And then I find out my chair is not there. And actually, a member of staff had said to me, do you really need it? Yeah, I do. Are you sure? Yeah. Have you tried walking? And you go, oh, hang on a minute. Never thought of that. Of course, you never say that. You just smile and go, hmm. And they found my chair 3 months later in Dublin, not been anywhere near Dublin, and it'd been cut in half. So that's kind of the worst. But I've certainly had friends who've had major damage to their sports equipment. And it's just things making it harder. How many times you have to explain what you need as you go through the airport? How many times you need to explain, no, I'll get to the gate on my own, I just need the aisle chair. I've had friends who've been refused access to the aisle chair on board to go to the bathroom. So one of my friends was taking a long haul flight and she was told that the aisle chair would be distressing for other passengers. Really? So she crawled up the aisle to get to the bathroom. So probably more of my experiences have been good than bad, but the ones that are bad are pretty awful.
Yeah, I remember when we were talking, Ed, you had something not dissimilar. There are so many angles to that, aren't there? There are the practical ones, but there's also the personal embarrassment and dignity and everything that goes with it. And neither of you are alone in facing these issues, are you? Because since the pandemic, we have seen really quite an incredible increase in the number of people requesting assistance with air travel. And I think under the latest figures we've seen, almost 2% of all passengers at a UK airport now request assistance. And that's 5.5 million people. How would you describe the current situation for passengers with reduced mobility or requiring assistance when travelling by air?
I think it's just ad hoc, actually. When you book your ticket, people assume that the whole of that route through is with the airline, but then it can be ground handling who's in charge of the equipment. It could be a separate assistance company who's in charge of getting you on and off. What we found from talking to people, and every disabled person I spoke to, we had a ton of focus groups, said, you know, okay, I don't want to just listen to you kind of moaning like I've just done. Give me your solutions. What do we need to do to be better? I had people saying to me, this airline, this airport's amazing. And then someone else saying, that airline is absolutely dreadful. So you go, oh. So that was a bit of a challenge as well, is that we couldn't kind of point to one and say, they're amazing. It's the ad hoc nature. It's the lack of coordination on booking assistance because every airline does it differently. Staff training came up really high in terms of solutions. And people were worried about being left on planes. And if you just look to Frank Gardner's experience, he travels a lot and he has a lot of bad experiences. If they can't flag Frank in the system to make sure that he's okay.
What hope is there for the rest of us?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, the Civil Aviation Authority do an annual airport accessibility report, don't they? So it came out just before the report from your group. And this time it said that 25 out of the 28 airports it had assessed were either good or very good. They've just picked out three that needed more work. Does that feel right to you? Or do you think perhaps the criteria need to be updated?
I think sometimes it can be a little bit of a moment in time with the information because people were getting back to me saying this airport's brilliant, this airport's not. You almost look like daily rankings. I would love to have given the CAA more powers But unfortunately, within the scope of what we're able to do, people were saying to me, oh, just do legislation, legislate it all. Well, even if the government wanted to do it today, it could take 2 years to get legislation across the line for the bit of the aviation industry that we in the UK can control. Then you've got all the international jurisdictions, which we have no control over at all. I know there are a few people who are a bit frustrated that we weren't able to mandate more. It was about shifting the culture of the aviation business. But in terms of what we can able to do, actually, it's a really complicated industry because ultimately it's about safety. It's about security. Can it be better? Absolutely, yes, it can. But when they're backed up and there's a million people going through and the staff are stressed and the passengers are stressed, that just makes stuff more complicated. So I think we went as far as we possibly could within the remit that we had. And it comes back to, before anyone gets an airside pass, they have appropriate training. So I think we did a reasonable amount. And also what I was really keen is that the report's quite short because people don't read 300-page reports. Well, I don't. So I wanted it to be something that people could just pick up, look at, understand. You don't have to have a PhD in the aviation business to understand what we were trying to recommend. Also really keen to leave something behind. So all the focus group work, everything is left behind at DFT. Because if someone's going to do this piece of work again, and they might need to in a couple of years, they don't need to redo necessarily all the stuff that we did. There's something for the next person who looks at this. But coming back to your question about CAA, you know, actually within my remit, I wasn't able to give CAA more powers. They were part of the group and they were really positive contributors to the group. I think it's given them something to think about again when they do their next iteration of their study.
Well, look, let's get into the group. Ed, do you want to kick off here?
Yeah, I got a question on how did the aviation accessibility group come about?
So the minister at the time, Lou Hague, I think had seen Sophie Morgan, TV presenter, have a number of bad experiences. And Lou decided to put together this task and finish group. I got asked to chair it, and there were a number of people put on from the industry. So we had airports, airlines, CAA. We had quite a big group in the end. So I was sort of given this group. The group were great, really honest and open. They weren't defensive in the meetings, which was really important because I think everyone who sat around the table wanted to do things better. And then we had a series of focus groups with disabled people, and then also with the airports, UK trade body, and with airlines. So we tried to get as much feedback as we possibly could. And as we were going along, we were feeding back to the airports and airlines and saying, look, this is where we think it's going. Tell us what you think. And we had to take the industry with us. Airports are businesses, and they need to get people flying from their airports, especially the smaller ones. And they need to make money. So if you've had a really bad experience and you take ages to get through security and you haven't got time to spend money, that's a failure for lots of bits of the airport. I don't think people mean to mess stuff up. It just happens.
Yeah. And with 5.5 million people experiencing some or all of these things, that's a big customer base that you want to get right, I would have thought, for airlines and airports.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you want people to spend money. You want people to have the opportunity, the ability to spend money. So for me, I always take it back to how you can get people to have the best experience.
The way you describe the process sounds much more positive and much healthier than people might sort of expect, given the fact that so many people were coming at it from a different angle, shall we say, to that of the passenger alone. Let's talk about some of the conclusions that you reached. You broke it down into, I think, five main themes. You've already alluded to one of them, training. That seemed to be a very big one.
Yeah, training was big because we got one airport to do a desktop exercise and they found that none of their training matched. The airlines training were different and the airport's training was different. So that's why we came out of the recommendation that anyone with an airside pass. We had quite a detailed debate about what was proportionate. Things like the assistant team, what we found was a lot of the companies actually do their lifting and handling courses based on hospital training. But that's transferring someone from bed to a wheelchair. That is not the enclosed space that you have inside any aeroplane. So it was little things that came out which were like, oh, actually, this is a bit daft. And a lot of it was about just being respectful to people. So how you speak to someone does have a big impact when you're going through security. We spoke to organisations that deal with like stomas and how people are treated. What medical equipment needs to go through the scanners. We had some amazing feedback from people who work in allergies. That was one area that we couldn't make a recommendation for because that's international jurisdiction. That's not UK. We could have put more stuff in there, but there's no point putting recommendations in that haven't got any chance whatsoever of getting across the line. So we did have a section at the end which said, you know, if the government were minded, it's very parliamentary language, these are the things they might like to think about. And that's why it was important that we left a whole pile of stuff behind.
How can we ensure training is standardised to a high level across the board?
That almost like a quality standard needs to be implemented. And I think this is where there may be a role for CAA in terms of actually having oversight of what people do. It's actually about a lot of the companies just sharing with each other what they do. There's no company that tries to do it badly. Actually, there's also in certain parts of the airport and the aviation business, it's quite a high turnover of staff as well. So actually, I do think the CAA's got a role in having oversight. There almost needs to be a kite mark for training. That's where I think it needs to go in the end.
Yeah.
The government's promised no new money or laws as a result of this report. What would you say to sceptics who suggest that this will go the way of previous reports on the issue?
Well, to be fair to the government, they said there was no money and no legislation before we started. So, you know, not that that makes it any better. Yeah, I mean, there's this work that's been done before. I've had my name over the years on lots of different reports. I think what it does is it shines a light on the industry and where there's gaps and where it's not going right. So I'm not going to be chairing the group going forward, but the group is going to carry on doing some work around the implementation and following up on this. You know, there isn't a central complaints mechanism, which also I think is difficult. People don't know where to go to complain if there's a problem. We didn't suggest anything quite like that, but there's lots of anecdotal evidence and each of the companies have evidence of failures, but the evidence the companies have won't be accurate because most people don't complain. So I kind of see the next iteration of this group trying to get better information on data. And there's people like Frank, like Sophie, who've got a public profile. When it goes wrong, they're able to post on social media. Most people don't have that ability. So I think there's lots of minor fails that are happening. The criticism that it's just going to be another report. Well, we had to do something and it's a step. But also what it does leave behind, it does leave a bit of a pathway as if there is going to be legislation or there's legislation that comes to us that can be amended, because, you know, my day job is the House of Lords, and this is very parliamentary. We have bills which are tagged Christmas tree bills, which basically is the government trying to do loads of stuff lumped together, and they call it Christmas tree because you can just hang anything on it. There are opportunities when we get to the stage of doing Christmas tree bills. If there's sections in there on transport, we can keep raising it. So this is not the end. This piece of work is the start of actually trying to make it better.
We're very keen to play a small part in campaigning on these sorts of issues.
Thank you. And it's, as I said, it's not the end.
No.
It's just a stepping stone in what we're all trying to do.
But wouldn't it be nice if we could make some progress towards that next stepping stone?
Oh, it would. Yes. thank you for what you're doing.
Tani, thank you very much indeed for coming on and talking about the report and your own experiences as well.
Thank you so much for your time. Thank you.